As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
All right, well, welcome back into another episode of the Buffalo Beat, everyone. The Bills will be looking for a much better result this coming weekend than with the previous two games that we saw. Next up, a meeting with the New York Jets. Of course, everybody knows what is going on with the Jets right now, them being winless, having quite possibly the worst roster in the league, combined with the worst coach in the league. Not really great stuff from a Jets perspective happening in 2020, but the Bills get them in what seems like to be a pretty good time compared, thinking about that they just lost their last two games. But we'll discuss all of that later on in the episode. I think what we can look to in this coming week and even next week is what could happen in the not-so-distant future. I mean, the trade deadline is obviously November 3rd, and when you look at things, the Bills seem like they would be in a position to add. And there's a lot of different elements that go into it, that being things they could trade from their perspective, the level of player that they could welcome in, the types of players that they would want, how much salary they could bring on. There's just so many different stuff. And it was also a busy week as well with, the Bills releasing a former starter in Quentin Spain. So Matthew Fairburn joins me as my podcast partner as always. And Matthew, I mean, where do we lead off with all of that? I guess maybe we should start with Spain just because that was the most, like, it just kind of caught everybody off guard that it was just a flat release and that they didn't even trade the guy.
Yeah, it's not really the type of move that inspires a lot of confidence. You know, a subtraction before the trading deadline. Weird timing. Sounds like it was in the works for a while, just because as soon as Quentin Spain was benched, as soon as he fell out of favor, he became a bit disgruntled. That's probably somewhat fair, but also not necessarily the response they want, right? You know, they want a guy that is willing to compete, but you also don't want a guy that's just, like, happy to be benched either. So there's a fine line there. He was clearly not happy with his role. The Bills didn't seem to have too many plans on changing it. What I found weird about it was that the situation got so out of control that he needed to be released right after Cody Ford got hurt at that same spot.
Right.
You know,
right.
You need him. And he probably saw that on, you know, after Monday night, but clearly this was something that, you know, the way Brandon Bean put it, was in the works for a while. And, you know, the decision had kind of been made at that point, which just feels like the relationship became something that they couldn't work out, which is unfortunate because they could probably use him this week perhaps beyond if Cody Ford isn't quite right. I know John Feliciano should be back potentially as soon as this week, if not, you know, maybe next week. but that doesn't really solve their problem with Cody Ford being injured. And I don't know, it's one of those kind of miscalculations of what they had in Quentin Spain to pay that money for him and to, you know, re-up his contract, even if it was, as we've mentioned before, a manageable deal in terms of they had an out after 1 year. There's not too much guaranteed money on the books. You're still looking at, you know, $5-ish million, $4 to $5 million that could have helped you right now at the trading deadline, where they don't have a lot of money to work with. You know, some of these deals, big deals that people have thrown out or big names that people are throwing out, there's a reason they don't have the money. Quentin Spain is one of those players. And if you didn't have a vision for him, it's weird. He won the Iron Bills, you know, competition in the offseason for their offseason workouts. He entered camp seemingly in a good position, worked hard to, you know, be one of their best offseason workers, and they went out and got Brian Winters, who doesn't really play his position, but the domino effect of everything led to Quentin Spain being this odd man out. It's just that they were, they had a quick, you know, reaction and didn't give him too much of a chance early in this season, Quentin Spain, that is, for a guy that they had just committed a decent amount of money to, not a unmanageable amount of money, but a decent amount of money to. And, you know, when you combine that with the money they committed to Trent Murphy before benching him, it's you know, some wasted funds that could have been used at the trading deadline. You know, a deal like Yannick Ngakoue, like, not saying they needed to make that deal, but they weren't even really in a position to do it because of all the money they have tied up in some of these guys. Mm-hmm. So I just think Quentin Spain probably wasn't a very tradable asset because of the contract. I imagine he'll get picked up relatively soon, but he wasn't super tradable because of his contract. And, you know, that means in order to evaluate this, you have to go back to March when they re-signed him. And I just think it was a little, you know, clearly a miscalculation, and, you know, not the only one they've had.
Yeah, certainly. I think the Spain one, it was somewhat predictable when they re-signed him, because when you sign him to that deal, you're thinking in your head, well, when you saw the terms of the contract and the fact that the signing bonus was so low, the immediate thought was, okay, this is going to turn into a one-year deal, because odds are they're going to come to their senses about Cody Ford and slide him inside, because that is clearly where he fits the best, and what he's done before the injury has shown that he is clearly more comfortable on the inside. And they wanted to commit to that when they got to the season and they found out that Darrell Williams could still play. I think that was a big part of the equation as well, to finally push Cody Ford on the inside. And then they also thought to themselves, okay, well, Feliciano's coming back and we love him at right guard, so why not throw Cody Ford at left guard right now, have it be a long-term solution with him and Deion Dawkins over there. And then once Feliciano is back, the runway is clear for him to return and get there and play in place of Brian Winters, who's really struggling right now. So that was their pie in the sky. But you're right, it goes back to the whole position of signing him to that deal back when they did. And it seemed fine at the time. I mean, it's average guard level money, but you also don't just want to light that money on fire like they did. Now, they couldn't have known that by benching him that he was going to get so upset that that the relationship would just sour like that. But when you make those risks and you already have in-house candidates to potentially take over for that. I suppose they didn't have Winters and they weren't all the way committed on Ford, but
the weird thing is
they were just,
like,
protecting themselves.
You know, since Feliciano signed, the guard situation has gotten worse than it was then, I think. They have Winters, but Feliciano
Spain,
got hurt.
Not Feliciano.
Yeah,
well,
since they signed Spain, their situation in house got worse, because they have Winters, but they got rid of, or Feliciano got hurt, Cody Ford got hurt, they got rid of Evan Bayham. You know, they got, you know, thinner there. And yeah, you know, some of these guys will come back from injury and things like that. But I think it's a, it's not a monumental error, but when you look at it combined with a few others and how it impacts what they can do right now, it, you know, it adds up. And I think it comes too from not necessarily having conviction with how they evaluated Cody Ford and, mm-hmm. you know, where they thought that situation would lead, because it didn't seem like they had a tremendous amount of conviction on Quentin Spain either. They waited a right. while to re-sign him. And yeah, I think that I guess it was an out for if Cody Ford wasn't very good at guard, or if Darryl Williams wasn't very good at right tackle. But I don't know. I think they've gotten to the point where they're not in a position, or not in as much of a position to throw a ton of resources at the wall and see what sticks, the way they were mm-hmm. the last couple of years. You look at,
they need to be a lot more calculated.
Yeah,
with
you
that
need
stuff
to be
now.
A little bit more accurate, instead of, which it's not a criticism of how they did things before, because they had the money and the resources to say, you know what, we'll sign 8 offensive linemen and, or, you know, add 8 offensive linemen in the draft and free agency and let the cream rise to the top. And you still want to have depth there, but you also have to manage your resources. And kind of the same thing goes on the defensive line too, right? You need to be a little bit more calculated in how you spread things out and leave yourself some wiggle room. And they didn't really do that on the offensive line. The offensive line hasn't really been a problem, but I think the fact that they got to a point where, you know, if it was about having depth on the offensive line, this situation wouldn't have gotten to this point where you cut a guy mm-hmm. when you probably need him most, you know, with Cody Ford being banged up. So, yeah, go ahead.
I was also going to say, I also think that their hand was kind of forced here, because from what Ryan Talbot of NewYorkUpstate.com reported, that another team was about to sign Justin Zimmer off their practice squad, and they needed a spot, and quickly, and the only spot that they had right there, logically, what in their brains was, okay, well, just got to do it with Quentin Spain, because I'm sure they probably tried to deal him. That happened, and it came at a terrible time, but if it had soured the way that it did over the previous 2 weeks, and both parties are responsible for that, I'm sure, then they probably never even thought of him as a potential solution for Cody Ford in the first place. And I guess that's the relationship management aspect to it. I guess it's also the idea that he was expendable at that point, but then it all goes back to the same discussion that we had, like, if he was at some point going to be expendable, then why sign him in the first place?
Yeah, I think that's the big piece of this, is that, you know, okay, Justin Zimmer is going to get signed to the 53-man roster. If Quentin Spain is, I mean, I think even with everything going on this week, if the situation is somewhat, you know, manageable, you probably find some other way to make room for Justin Zimmer. But instead,
true,
it was one of those where it's like, well, this situation isn't going away. This guy's not happy, and we need a roster spot. So, you know, we haven't been able to trade this guy. We'll just move on. Mm-hmm. If he's happy in his depth role, I don't know that you're cutting him this week just to make room for Justin Zimmer. You're probably cutting somebody else. So it's like, you know, it was a timing thing where it was like, well, we need Justin, you know, we want Justin Zimmer to hang around, and, you know, this guy's not going to get any happier. Clearly, because if Quentin Spain still wanted out, even though his spot was there waiting for him, then, you know, the writing was on the wall. But it's an unfortunate deal for Spain in a lot of ways, because I think a lot of this simply has to do with Cody Ford. They've kind of moved a lot of things around over the last few years because of Cody Ford, and mm-hmm. Spain is sort of the latest casualty of that. You know, last year, perhaps if you're, you know, I think if Ty Inseki's 100% healthy and you're being 100% honest with yourself, he's probably getting most of those reps. I don't think it's ever ideal to have guys splitting reps 50-50 on the offensive line.
No, certainly not.
And then
Sean McDermott was very adamantly against that when we talked to him in training camp.
Right, heading into this year, he did not want to do that again.
Right.
And so then you're kind of, it's like you needed that Cody Ford domino to fall before you figured out everything else on the offensive line, which isn't entirely fair to the rest of the group, although it's understandable because Cody Ford's a second-round pick, and that's just how NFL teams operate. They're going to cater to their high draft picks until they clearly can't anymore, right? You know, and I think that's what's happening a little bit with Ford. Ford has not been their best offensive lineman. He hasn't been terrible, but
yeah, he's improved dramatically.
He's getting better.
The Chiefs game was not good, but the games before the Chiefs game, I thought he was at an average to slightly above average level, which they'll take from what he was last year. It's a definitive upgrade from what he was, and it's because he's at his natural position. It's where he should be in the NFL.
And I think if Quentin Spain's a mid-round pick, you know, there's a much different conversation. But because he was a throwaway free agent signing that hit last year, you know, they're not as invested in keeping him around long term, even though I think he's still got something left in the tank. You know, he didn't get off to a great start this year, but, you know, there was a lot of conversation about how offensive linemen would take a little bit to get settled in with everything that happened this summer and the lack of preseason games and short training camp. I think it was somewhat fair to expect, you know, some up and down play up there. So, I don't think it's something that dramatically changes the long-term outlook of this team, because I think Quentin Spain was a one-year type of contract anyways. But
yeah, they're like going to clear that room for next year's salary cap regardless.
In the very short term, it's one of those where it's like, well, you know, this guy clearly wasn't ready to buy into the depth role, and, you know, he wasn't going to be a spot starter this week. And, you know, he wasn't bought in anymore. And, you know, to some extent, that's a Quentin Spain problem. And to what extent it's a Bills problem, I guess, remains to be seen, because right now this seems like an isolated incident. But they just benched two other high-profile players last week. So you get to a point where you have all this depth and competition, which is great, but guys also need to understand their roles on the team and not have that, you know, pulled out from underneath them at various times for reasons that sometimes are in their control and sometimes aren't. And, you know, there's a balancing act of keeping guys happy while keeping them motivated, all that. And it gets more complicated when you have more NFL caliber players on the roster like they have the last couple of years. There's more competition, more jobs lost, more feelings hurt. And I don't know, we'll see how it shakes out along the defensive line, because feelings probably needed to be hurt to get what you want out of that group. They're paying them so much money and getting so little out of them that, you know, making moves certainly was warranted in some ways. But I don't know, to me, that just the more I've thought about those moves, the less they make sense. What they did on Monday night, you know, the forecast called for rain and you're taking out two of your best run defenders, kind of inviting them. I guess it was less about, you know, reducing Harrison Phillips and Trent Murphy's snaps as it was outright scratching them for Brian Cox and Justin Zimmer. I think Justin Zimmer played well. I guess the Trent Murphy one is a bigger deal than the Harrison Phillips one, because we may be trending towards Harrison Phillips being the type of player who you only play in certain game plans, right? I don't know.
Well, like, yes,
he's still working his way back from an ACL injury. And, you know, he's not quite himself, but you wonder if it will be a situation where his long-term outlook in the league is as that type of player. Trent Murphy, I mean, you could have saved a lot of money, first of all, by not having him on the roster. And if he's not, you know, the quote unquote giving you the best chance to win, if Brian Cox Jr. is giving you more of a chance to win against the Chiefs, A, I disagree. And B, if that's the case, if that's how you feel in the most important game of the season, then there's really no reason to have him on the roster. And that's just a miscalculation or miscommunication or something. I understood the logic of keeping Trent Murphy around. I did not understand the logic when you take him out of the Chiefs game and then try to brush off the question of why is he on the team if, you know, he's not giving you the best chance to win in one of your most important games, arguably your most important game. Yeah. And Sean McDermott said, you know, he gets paid to make those decisions, so he'll be making them, which is fine. But I don't think Trent Murphy has been – I think the problem I have with the moves is after the first half, when you're getting gashed on the ground, you don't have the option of saying, all right, now let's get Trent back in there. Let's get him some more snaps and try to stop the bleeding. And I don't think Trent Murphy is a guy that – like, you know what he is. You know who he is as a player. And he's not the type of guy that needs, like, a kick in the pants. And that's not how he was playing through the first six games of the season. That was, his problem, I don't think, was effort. His problem wasn't that he needed a wake-up call. If he needed a wake-up call, he got it with Mario Addison, right? Like, it's a weird... It was a strategy thing more than anything else. And I think it backfired because you had nobody to turn to. Is Brian Cox Jr. or AJ Epenesa, for that matter, that much of a better pass rusher than Trent Murphy? I don't know. Like, probably not. And they're certainly not better run defenders. Certainly not Brian Cox Jr. And AJ Epenesa at this stage in his career is still figuring it out. So what was the motivation for benching Trent Murphy? Like, do you think it's going to... I think that that's a guy that is a try-hard player, an effort player, and a guy who makes a lot happen because of that. You know, he's a guy that's focused on details, all those things. You can question his upside and ability as a pass rusher for sure, but that's not really an effort problem. So you're not – are you trying to wake this guy up? What are you doing? Like, I think there should be a lot of confusion in that room over that decision, and I wouldn't be – I wouldn't blame, you know, Harrison Phillips or Trent Murphy if they're a little, you know, confused or put off by the whole deal, because it clearly backfired. It clearly didn't work. And I just think it's not as if you were like, all right, we're going to, you know, scratch Trent Murphy and dress an extra linebacker or an extra defensive back or an extra guy on offense that is going to get a little more run, and we've got some gadget plays in store for it. It was like, no, we're going to replace him with another defensive end who's not as good. Certainly not as good against the run. Maybe Brian Cox Jr. has a little bit more pop as a pass rusher, but I don't know. When you combine it, too, with the decision to keep him, it's just it's a confusing one.
Well, I think these two conversations are good ones, and I think – it's an important segue into what the Bills have upcoming, and that would be the trade deadline.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
All right, let's pick up the Harrison Phillips point, because I think he and Murphy kind of go hand in hand with what they did. And I absolutely hear everything you're saying about the logic not adding up, and I agree with you that the logic doesn't add up, especially when, you know, you're doing it for a player like Brian Cox Jr. and still keeping someone like AJ Epenesa out there, who is clearly in over his head at this point, out on the field. He doesn't look like the second round pick that they drafted. It looks very thin compared to what he looked at Iowa. However, I think this could be a sign that they're trying to move both Trent Murphy and Harrison Phillips. Phillips is just about getting to the Zay Jones point, right? And there's a lot of interesting parallels between what Zay Jones went through and what Harrison Phillips has gone through. Now, the key difference here is that Harrison Phillips tore his ACL last year. And you have to wonder if maybe the light will go on eventually for him when he starts to get a little bit more comfortable with his knees. But the big point about Harrison Phillips is that even before the injury, they did not view him as a good run defender. And I think when they're going against the Chiefs and the Chiefs are just gashing them against the run, you know, I don't know that they necessarily thought they would have gotten a huge improvement in defending the run from Harrison Phillips, which probably says a lot about him and what they view him to be. And I just think back to the Zay Jones thing. And so I went back and I looked, because Zay Jones, you know, they were so positive about him for so long, right? Like they went through and they kept giving him opportunities in his first two seasons. And then his third season came along. He continued to be in the starting lineup with John Brown and Cole Beasley. And then all of a sudden, from week four to week five, week four, he played 62 snaps. Week five, I believe that was against the Patriots. Week five, it was against the Titans. They called up Duke Williams from the practice squad. Zay Jones took one offensive snap. 2 days later, he was traded from the roster. They made the determination from the first month of the season that they just didn't see it. They wanted to cut their losses. They wanted to get something while he still had value remaining. I wonder with Phillips, because he does have a vast injury history, and to a certain degree, so does Trent Murphy, but we'll get to Murphy in a minute. But you look at Phillips' situation, same sort of deal. Like, he's shown flashes here or there as a pass rusher, but they don't believe him to be a pass rusher in their system. They want him to be a one technique defensive tackle, and he's not a good enough pass rusher to play three technique. He's not explosive enough to do it. And if you're not securing the run in the middle of the defense and you're getting pushed around like he has been, then in their minds, they're like, okay, well, they could be out on this guy. And so I wonder if they are not playing Phillips after going from such a big role or such a big rotational role to nothing. I wonder if they're looking at him and trying to gauge the market and see what's out there. Maybe try and flip him for a late round pick and just cut their losses that way, because they do have a glut of defensive linemen right now. Like, something has to bend with that, because you cannot have 10 defensive linemen on your roster when you are so thin at cornerback, when you are thin potentially at tight end. You know, there's just, it doesn't leave you a lot of wiggle room in a lot of different areas. And so I think, I just wonder if maybe, and if these two guys are scratched again this week, then I think that's absolutely a potential reason for why they're scratched, you know, just so happened to be three, two, one games before the trade deadline. And Murphy is someone that they probably want to try and salvage as well, just because they probably shouldn't have kept him on, and because he's not giving them the pass rushing effort that they want. He's a solid run defender, we all know that. His salary coming in was not worth it if he wasn't going to be rushing the passer. Like, you need more juice off the edge. I mean, consistent, yes, solid player, average player, fine, all these good things. If he was making $4 million as opposed to $9 million, sign me up. But it's just not the case with Murphy. He's never been that pass rusher. He's never become that guy for them. And I wonder, because now there's two things working with Murphy's contract. One is the
likely to be earned incentives of the per game active bonus, which I believe is a little, is about 32,000 per game that he's inactive that they could save against the cap. And if they were to trade him, and if he was healthy enough for them to trade him, then they would be able to clear an additional around four, maybe a little bit under four, depending on when they traded him, for his remaining prorated base salary. This is not a Quentin Spain situation where they can just cut Trent Murphy and recoup those base salary, because they kept him on through week one, and he can file for a one-time only termination pay, to which the Bills would have to pay him the remainder of his base salary, and it would still account on their salary cap figure. So they need to, I would assume, because both of these guys have an injury history, that this was part lineup, but also part, okay, protecting ourselves in the event that we want to move either of these guys. I think a lot of logic points to that way.
Yeah, they have a problem where they have so many defensive linemen on the roster. They have more money tied up in that position than any team in the league. And it also is arguably their biggest need heading into the trading deadline.
Yeah, that's like, it's crazy.
It's the worst possible combination of things. Like, they have invested $50 million in their salary cap this year. They have a third-round pick in 2018 in Harrison Phillips, a first-round pick in the top 10 in Ed Oliver in 2019, a second-round pick in 2020, their first of the draft, A.J. Epenesa. Those should be cheap assets that are helping your team in the top three rounds, and they're really not. Add to that the money they've paid Jerry Hughes, who's been good, probably the best of anybody. The Mario Addison money is significant, but I think he's playing okay.
Those two guys are fine for me. Hughes did not have a good game against Kansas City, but every game before that, he's been good for them. Addison has been fine too, but
he's been fine.
You're absolutely
right. He makes a lot of money, and he's old. Like, how, I don't know how much longer. He's not playing out of this world. He's playing well.
He's been better than Murphy by a lot, I think.
Then you've got Trent Murphy not even playing at this point, Vernon Butler, and Quentin Jefferson, who have been average, and they make quite a bit of money as well. Not a disgusting amount of money, but a significant amount of money. And to get nothing out of essentially almost that entire group with all those resources that I just mentioned, that's really bad. This is a team that hasn't been able to regenerate the defensive line talent that it let walk out the door in a lot of cases. I mean, Marcell Dareus isn't even in the league anymore, but he was the start of shipping him out. They needed to get that contract off the books. Kyle Williams retired. Shaq Lawson and Jordan Phillips walked this offseason. And while they made good money on their contracts, and it's probably the smart move to let them walk, you can't do it if you're not able to replace them, right? You know, you can't just, when you do make those decisions, you have to be able to replace guys and replace the talent. And they're getting close to having to do that on other spots of the defense, where you need your drafted players, your cheap talent, to step up and make plays. You look at the money they invested in even guys like AJ Klein and Tyler Matakevich. Like, to me, yeah, like, Matakevich has been fine on special teams. I don't have any reason to say otherwise. Mm-hmm. But that's a good amount of money to pay a guy that can only do that. When you're having such linebacker problems as they have this year, you would think he'd be a guy that could help you out with the salary he's making. And he's just a special teams guy, so he's not really doing that. And AJ Klein, we've covered, you know, plenty. He's not bringing a whole lot to the table. You know, there's a revolving door at the number two cornerback spot. Josh Norman hasn't been great, and he's hurt again. At what point are you going to have to replace these safeties? Not tomorrow, but not, you know, 5 years from now either. So when talent leaves, you need to backfill with either some cheap free agents that you hit on or some draft picks that work out. And there's a legitimate question about almost all of their draft picks on defense over the last few years about whether they will be those players that can, you know, make that difference. Is Tremaine Edmonds going to be a difference maker for you? Maybe not, the way he's been playing. Ed Oliver remains to be seen. AJ Epenesa very much remains to be seen. Taron Johnson, I would say that's a no. You know, since Tre'Davious White, we just talked about Harrison Phillips too, another top three round pick. Arguably, like in terms of value and what he's, the way he's playing, Saran Neal, I think is a hit. You know, a guy that probably, he's given you what you hope in that mid-round pick. A lot of these other guys aren't really giving you what you want based on the investment, and that could end up being a problem. I think that's all this stuff we talk about is part of why when people say, what's wrong with the defense? That's what's wrong. You know, a lot of these guys just aren't playing well.
Yeah, I think a couple of things kind of triggered my brain there based on what they're looking at. And, you know, just to kind of wrap the Murphy situation, I know a lot of people are probably sitting there thinking, okay, why did they keep this guy in the first place? What was the deal there? Well, I think Murphy was fortunate for a couple of different reasons. For one, Star Lotulelei opted out, which opened up another spot on the defensive line for them to potentially keep. So that was working in his favor. The second thing that worked in his favor is the fact that AJ Epenesa just didn't look like he could play in the summer. And they were probably very nervous about him being their third defensive end. And so they wanted to keep Trent Murphy around. And knowing that they had a short build up to the regular season, it probably influenced their decision even further. However, wanted to get to the Ed Oliver thing because he's someone that has come under fire. And, you know, the fact that he's not making flash plays in the backfield is concerning. Though when I did go back and I watched the film for the Chiefs game, the one thing I noticed flat out was first snap, Ed Oliver was not where he usually always is. He was lining up at one tech. So I'm like, huh, that's peculiar. Like they switch them occasionally, but not to a grand degree. Usually it's always Oliver at three technique. And then, you know, last year it was Lotulelei at one tech, Phillips at one tech, all of these different things. So I went and I thought to myself, okay, well, I'll keep note of this. And then I kept looking and it kept happening again and again and again. So then I went back and I charted every single defensive snap. And so for every time that the Bills were in their basic setup and it wasn't a pass rushing down where they had a three tech and a one tech, Ed Oliver basically, he had a few snaps with Mario Addison, but he basically only played with Quentin Jefferson. And Ed Oliver, out of his 34 snaps in those very usual setups for the Bills defensive line, he played one technique 23 out of 34 snaps. And that's doing him a disservice a little bit because that's not his game. They're doing that out of self-preservation because they don't have a good one technique defensive tackle on the roster. Against Kansas City, they dressed prototypical three technique defensive tackles with Butler, Jefferson, Zimmer, and Oliver. And they needed two of those guys to play one tech. And what we ended up seeing was them doing a lot of switching. I mean, Quentin Jefferson is a complete mess when he's at one tech. The Chiefs averaged over 10 yards a carry when he was at one tech. And it was just, it was an absolute train wreck. So to mitigate that, they put Oliver there because they like those two together when the other option is Zimmer and Butler, when that was actually working, when Zimmer was lining up at one technique for them. So I will go to bat for Ed Oliver a little bit here, because on those reps where he played three tech, he looked like the player that they want him to be. But when you're lining him up in a spot because you can't do it with Quentin Jefferson, and you have all, and you're depending on him to occupy blockers, even though he's a smaller guy, and to be able to hold the point at the line of scrimmage, then you're not really setting him up for success, which is why to me, and this brings us all the way back to the trade deadline, which is why to me that without question, the number one need for them right now, if they can find a good rental to do it, is a one technique defensive tackle. And the guy that I kind of landed on was Dalvin Tomlinson of the Giants. I think he's a really good player. Could probably get him for a mid-round pick. He's on an expiring contract. He's on a cheap contract to where it wouldn't hit their salary cap too much because they only have about $4 million in cap space right now. And certainly there's the relationship with Gettleman. He would fit right into their defense. All of these different things. So that's the guy that I've landed on that they should have. So that way they could slot him in at one technique, move Ed Oliver back to full-time three technique defensive tackle where he belongs, get Quentin Jefferson into that hybrid defensive tackle defensive end role, which is part of the reason why they kept Murphy in the first place, because Jefferson wasn't able to play in that hybrid defensive end defensive tackle role because Latulele opted out. So it's just been like this domino effect where all of these different things happen and all of these different decisions influence them to the point where they've gotten to right now where they don't have a solid enough one technique on their roster to dress on game day. It's just it's a mess up front from that perspective right now.
Yeah, it's causing a lot of other things to fall apart as a result, because the domino effect creates issues all over the defense, and it's probably not helping Tremaine Edmonds' cause, and it's certainly not helping these other defensive linemen that have to get moved around, and it's kind of just stunning the amount of, and I get that to some extent, you know, Star opting out was unexpected. They were thinking they would have him for another year.
They were
two.
Thinking they would have him when they signed Quentin Jefferson. They did not expect Jefferson to be a full-time defensive tackle, I don't think.
No, the Vernon Butler piece, like, I feel like he should be able to play there and give them something, you know, particularly at the salary he's making, but also they could have, you know, invested a draft pick. But now you're in a spot where, you know, Dalvin Tomlinson, I think, would be the most logical of trade targets. He's playing really well this season. And, you know, he's in the final year of his contract. The Giants should be sellers.
They're 1-6. I mean,
right.
Come on.
I mean, but in that division, they're not that far out of it.
That's true.
It's a weird division this year.
I'll say.
So they, if they winning last night would have kept them in it a lot more, but it is a strange division. But then you're talking about another resource poured into that defensive line that they need it now. So it's hard to argue, but it's like, man, another mid-round draft pick that won't be used next year. And if they can't bring, you know, they don't want to sign Dalvin Tomlinson back because he has a great year or whatever. I don't know. It's just it's this vicious cycle of pouring resources into a defensive line, and there's a lot of swings and misses on what they've done so far on the defensive line over the last few years. So they better hope the next time they get it right.
No doubt. So yes, there's a lengthy list of things that they could do here. And by the way, Butler, he did play some one technique, but this is actually a fascinating stat from that game. When they had Justin Zimmer and Vernon Butler in against the Chiefs, and Zimmer was at one tech and Vernon Butler was at three, the Chiefs rushed against that combination 10 times. They only gained 16 yards, 1.6 yards per carry. It's like, that's one of those stats where you're like, wait, really? That actually happened? It did. And so that's why I think Zimmer's got to be in the lineup from this point forward, and until he shows like that he can't play. But he was great. He was the best player on the field for the Bills, which is kind of shocking because he was a practice squad guy, and a late fill in at training camp too, right before things geared up there. So yeah, they've got some things that they need to concentrate on.
Victorinox, the makers of the original Swiss Army knife, have been a reliable companion for life's everyday challenges, mastering functionality, innovation, iconic design, and uncompromising quality with its products. The Victorinox Swiss Army knife provides you with all the things you don't think about until you need it: tweezers, a screwdriver, and even a corkscrew. With the Victorinox Swiss Army Knife, you can be prepared to master everyday life. You can find Victorinox Swiss Army Knives at Dick's Sporting Goods. Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS. You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. Shopify.com/theathletic.
All right, let's quickly get into this Jets game because... When I mean, we don't need a lot of analysis with it, so we could just get straight to the pick. But the Jets are horrible. There's really no other way to describe it. I know a lot of people are saying, well, the Dolphins were winless last year, and they played the Bills tough. The major difference between the Dolphins and the Jets is that the Dolphins head coach wasn't Adam Gase, and the Dolphins knew that they needed to perform for their first year head coach, and it really looked like they had something going. And it looked like they on film leading up to the Bills game that they played a couple of teams close before that game, and it really looked like they were ready to kind of be a little bit more dangerous than they had been in the early part of the season. The Jets, they look horrific on both sides of the ball. They look uninspired. Just all of these, and it looks like they're just trying to play out the string for a lame duck head coach. And you know, they lack talent in a lot of different areas. They're shipping talent out. They just traded away their top run stuffer right now, and Steve McClendon. He's now with the Buccaneers, and in the most hilarious story, because the Jets played down in Miami last week. He didn't even bother flying back to Jersey. He just got a rental car and drove to Tampa Bay for Miami because he wanted to be done with it. That's like such an incredible story to kind of encapsulate what the Jets are going through right now. So when you look at this matchup, the Jets are not like the Dolphins, and the Bills are banged up right now, but I don't think it matters. And I'll just get straight to the pick. You know, the Bills, they're favored by 12.5. I've got the Bills in a landslide here. I'm taking them 34-10, and I think the offense is going to get back on track. I think defensively, the interior defensive line is going to get back on track and get into the backfield because the Jets' interior line stinks. And I think it's going to be a big day against the Jets' zone defense. And they might not even have their best offensive player in Jamison Crowder, who injured his groin and couldn't practice on Thursday. So not a lot of great things for the Jets. Who do you got?
Yeah, I think the Bills win this game. I think if they don't win this game, there's going to be some problems.
An uproar?
Yeah, I mean, it's not really a must-win game in a mathematical sense by any means, but to kind of stop the bleeding of the last couple of weeks, this game couldn't come at a better time. I mean,
yeah.
To your point, this isn't a team that is necessarily as scrappy as the Dolphins were in the first year with Brian Flores really trying to get that thing off the ground. This is a team with a coach who's very much on his way out, and they'd probably be more dangerous if they had fired Adam Gase, you know, last week or the week before.
Totally right.
You know, and they'd have a bit more wind in their sails. It almost feels like they're waiting for him to be fired. Sam Darnold looks like he'll be back, so that's a thing, but Sam Darnold isn't very good. Denzel Mims might be back. Looks like they'll have some firepower at receiver, but possibly not Jamison Crowder. Would it shock me?
Crowder is everything to Darnold.
He is. He's his security blanket for sure. Mims has been, you know, a guy that they thought would do a lot as a rookie, and he hurt both hamstrings at various points this summer. So yeah, there's just not a lot of bright spots on the Jets, and so it's a game that it's weird because you feel like you won't learn much if the Bills win, even if they win handily, and if they lose, you know, it's lose-lose. You don't learn much if they win, and if they lose, they've lost to the Jets and handed them their first win of the season. Now, the last time they were this big of road favorites, they did lose, but that was in like the early 90s, so it was a long time ago. But this is like a historic point spread for the Bills to be this big of favorites on the road. But I wouldn't be surprised if the Jets cover the spread because weird stuff happens at the end of games, but I'm thinking a
backdoor cover. Yeah, absolutely.
You know, that stuff happens all the time, and it's hard to guess if Sam Darnold will, you know, be feeling it in garbage time to rack up some yards. But I think the Bills are pretty easy pick as a 2-touchdown win here.
Yeah. All right. So I know we talked about a lot what was wrong with the Bills, but I think both
it
of
could
us
could be 5-2 by the end of the weekend.
Two
the
plus
rest of the
touchdown
division
win.
Stinks.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like the Patriots really don't look good. The Dolphins just turned to a rookie quarterback. The Jets are a disaster. So while the upside of the Bills can certainly be called into question after losses to the Titans and Chiefs, the division is right there. And, you know, they have a tough schedule, but might not need more than 9 or 10 wins to be right there to win the division at the end of the year and, you know, snag a playoff spot. So once that happens, who knows? They haven't inspired a lot of confidence over the last 2 weeks that they're a team that will be able to make a run in January, but stranger things have happened in what is a strange NFL season, and a lot of stuff is still sitting right in front of them, not really necessarily through too much doing of their own. It's just not a strong division, frankly, and right. There's going to be some wins to be had because of it, including this weekend.
And I will say, if there was one positive takeaway from going back and watching the Chiefs film, it's that I didn't think Josh Allen was as bad as I initially thought. He actually looked like he was doing some next level things still, and it was just a lot of failing of the offensive line, particularly the guards up front, and where he had to get the ball out of his hand quickly. Did miss some throws, but he does that every game. So, I mean, that's another source of optimism. And I think he's going to have him and the passing offense are going to have a really strong showing against this Jets team. And if they don't, then I guess the people are going to be up in arms again. All right, that'll do it for us. If you want to check out anything that Matthew Fairburn or I or myself have written this week or in coming weeks or really ever, just go to theathletic.com/thebuffalobeat right now for a special subscriber, for a special decrease on our annual subscription rate. And again, that's theathletic.com/thebuffalobeat. You can find Matthew's talk with GM Brandon Bean and about the Quentin Spain thing and a little bit about the trade deadline upcoming. And there's some stuff there. He went back and rewatched the game and had some thoughts from it. I have my All-22 from the Chiefs game that takes a deep dive into Tremaine Edmonds. And, you know, I got a little into the Ed Oliver stuff, but that goes more in depth than Justin Zimmer, all of that good stuff. And then I have a pretty lengthy trade deadline piece that shows you some targets that the Bills could look to that fits their system and that would make sense from a salary cap perspective. So find all of that right now. Just go to theathletic.com/thebuffalobeat. All right, Matthew Fairburn, fond words, anything?
I've got nothing. I just remember when you're watching this game that this is the house that Matt Barkley built not too long ago, inspiring some great moments on the podcast. So who knows? Maybe things will go so well that the Bills will throw Matt Barkley in there again at the end of the game.
And we could have a new award after this game, because if Ike Butker gets the start at left guard, that's too good of a name to not have an award after. So just saying. All right. That'll do it for us. For Matthew Fairburn, my name is Joe Biscaglia. Thank you to everyone for listening to this episode of the Buffalo Beat. And we will talk to you after the game on Sunday. See you then.